You're listening to the USEA official podcast, which takes you behind the scenes of eventing, covering all the big events, professional tips and tricks, interviews, special guests, and the latest USEA eventing news. Welcome to the USEA official podcast, episode 262. And we have a very special episode for you, listeners. I've got two very lovely guests with me. I'm going to start by saying hello to Rob Burke. Rob, how are you? How is life treating you?
Hanging in there. You know, it's another day in quarantine. How about you?
Pretty much the same. Basically, we're rolling along here in the UK. Eventing has actually, as we're recording this, started back today. So there is a huge amount of excitement. You're a little bit ahead of us in the States. But I will welcome our second guest, our special guest, I should say. He is chairman of the USEA Cross Country Safety Committee. Welcome, John Holling.
Thank you for having me.
We're really looking forward to having you on the show and catching up with all things safety with you, because we have been following your progress over the last few months in terms of the Frangible Technology fundraising that's been going on, and it is some incredible work. Before we go into that in a little bit more detail, would you mind perhaps explaining what your role on the Cross Country Safety Committee is and sort of what involvement you have in that?
Yeah, sure. So basically, I guess, I don't know, Rob, how many years ago was it that we actually officially formed that committee?
I think it was about 4 years. Yeah.
Okay. So I've been the chair of the Cross Country Safety Committee, either myself or with my good friend, Sarah Broussard, since then. And basically, our committee's job is to look over, basically look over the sport and review any issues that come up, whether that be accidents or other things that we, foresee as issues that maybe could lead to problems in the sport, and then come up with recommendations and changes if they need to happen to try to keep things safe. Yeah, particularly pertaining to the cross country phase.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? Eventing is known for being there being a degree of risk, and it is all about minimizing that risk and making the sport as safe as possible. And there are so many changes that have come in, particularly in the last few years, and there are obviously massive developments happening all the time, and it's being able to act on those and implement them as appropriate. Rob, safety is obviously something that's been at the forefront of the USEA's mind and very much part of what you've been doing for a number of years now, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I'll say, too, that I think John's kind of understating it, too, because he does. He also is kind of our connection between the USEA, our association, and the FEI, as well as the Federation. He's kind of like been this amazing conduit through all three. But as the association, we've been focused on it for years, long before I was even CEO. We're a small organization at the end of the day, but we've pumped a ton of money into research. We've had a lot of announcements lately about research coming out of Kentucky, and it's kind of just an ongoing thing. And I'll say, as CEO, both myself and my predecessor, Joe Whitehouse, we are actually the liaison to the safety committees. The CEO is, and that just kind of, I think, puts a highlight on the fact on how important it is that we're involved in those discussions as much as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a huge team effort. John, is it something that you work on with other countries as well, that it is a sort of a combined effort and sort of pooling ideas and developments?
Yeah. So like Rob was saying, I've sort of, I don't know how, become like...
Because you're very, very good at it.
You care. You're good. Yeah.
You know what it is? I don't think it's that I'm very good at it. I think it's that I'm very passionate about it. Not to get like too far into it, but many years ago at an event here in the States, I lost a horse on cross country, and I had a little bit of a reckoning with myself as to, was I doing the right thing? And I decided that I loved this sport, and I thought that it was a great sport to be in, and I love the horses and I love the people, and I wasn't going to give up on it. But in order to do that, I needed to take this on and do whatever the sport asked of me to do. So fortunately, they let me help as little as I could, or as much as I could. And so, yes, I also am the national safety officer to the FEI for the US. So I'm really fortunate. And I have to say, not to sound like too much of an arrogant jerk, but I think the US is very fortunate that they have somebody who sort of can wear the hat internationally and domestically. It obviously means that there's a consistent line of communication or a consistent message going from the US worldwide and within the country. So I think there is a really nice benefit to that, that the things that we're doing here in the US get noticed or talked about within the FEI, and the things that the FEI are doing get immediately brought back to the US. And it's I think it makes things a lot easier that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the key word there, communication, is very key in terms of making sure that everything is very much out in the open, because this needs to be talked about. You know, this is part of what this show is about. It is part of what the fundraising is about, is to raise awareness, talk about it. Let's all pull together and make the sport safer, which is ultimately what we are all in it for. Let's talk a little bit about the massive fundraising effort that has happened this year, the Frangible Technology Funds, which, John, I know it is a cause very close to your heart. We're going to go on how close to your heart a little bit later on in the show. But just tell us a bit about that, because am I right in saying over $300,000 has been raised so far?
Yeah, so Rob has the official number. I think we're 300 and what, 20-ish?
23, yeah, you got it.
23, yeah.
Rob's got it down to the penny.
He does. He's good at that. Every time, poor Rob, I text him about once a week, and it tends to be on a Sunday for some reason, because I have time, I guess. Sorry about that, Rob. And ask him for the new total. So I feel like he has to have it, and if he doesn't, I'm sure he just makes up a number to get me off the phone.
No.
It's actually $323,000. Or sorry, $323,033.51 as of right now, actually.
Nice. Good job.
That's impressive. That is impressive.
So we're really lucky that we got this matching grant from the Manton Foundation, and I can't thank them enough, because in reality, we're at $323,000 whatever and 51 cents, like Rob was saying. But what that means for us as the membership is we really only have about 78 or so thousand to go, and then we're going to get to our $500,000 goal. And I have to say, when I sort of first put this out there that we needed to raise $500,000, I didn't really think a whole lot, because that's what I do sometimes, is I just spout stuff out and say it and don't think about
find a number.
Yeah. It seemed like a good start, and I think it is a good number to be able to start and be able to realistically make a substantial change towards improving safety in the sport. And I can't say that if you'd asked me on that day, are we going to get there within a year, that I would have said sure thing. And, you know, 3 weeks later, when we were all shut down from quarantine, I would have told you there was no way. So, you know, I guess the main thing that I want to keep saying to everybody in the membership is congratulations and great job, because it doesn't matter how much I do ridiculous things to try to convince people to raise money or keep posting it, or how much effort Rob puts into it, which I know has just been tremendous on his side. If the membership doesn't step up and put the money out there and share it themselves, this wouldn't have gone anywhere. You know, you'd have a few thousand dollars and that would be the end of it. So it's pretty amazing.
One of the cool things too, is you already see it in the field too, because it was important to John and the review committee that he's a part of, including Andy Bowles, Emily Holmes, Darren Millett, and Mark Grandia, that they like really quickly wanted the funds out in the field creating fences. And so we already have funded 112 fences around the country at 62 different venues. So it's insane. I mean, and you go to these venues, and we've been posting pictures, and you see the fences already constructed with a little sign that says funded from the Frangible Tech Fund. It's pretty amazing.
I think that's the really cool thing, isn't it? That actually this is something very tangible that people can see, that they will be jumping. This is for the members and for the safety of everybody involved in the sport. If we just take it back a step, because I know, John, you said you would never have thought this could have happened within a year. It was actually only, I think, the beginning of March that this fund really started to create the fundraising. It got a huge amount of traction very, very quickly. What is the aim? Was it 500 fences to go out to USEA events?
Yeah. So like I said, I was actually sitting in my truck getting ready to go warm some people up for cross country. And I just felt like I needed to say something. And so I sort of put a video out and said $500,000. And I didn't really at the time know what that would get us, but I knew it was a significant amount of money. It was a goal that we could try to reach. And it basically cost $1,000 a fence, which worked out to be a nice coincidence, I guess. So yeah, you know, we're talking 500 fences out on course. And I think, I don't know, how many recognized events do we have that are eligible for this, Rob? Do you know?
We have about 120 venues. How's that?
Okay. All right. So it's a significant number of fences. And you know, one thing that I just want to say that I think is really important for the membership and honestly for the designers and builders, and I know those guys know this already, but the goal here isn't that we're going to have 500 additional tables on cross country. The goal is that we're going to be replacing tables that aren't safe with tables that are more safe. And the one thing that I wanted to make sure that I want to make sure gets out there is that tables are good jumps. We need them on courses in certain places, but my only concern with this whole fundraiser going forward is that I don't want to go out to an event and now see an entire course of giant collapsible tables out there and nothing else. There's a lot of other really great jumps. And so one of the goals that we put forward from the task force that's in charge of this with, you know, like Rob was saying, we've got Andy Bowles and Emily Holmes and Darren Millett and Mark Grandia, and I'm sure I'm missing somebody else there, but a great group. And then my cross-country safety committee, which has a brilliant group of people, way smarter than any group of people I've ever been around, is once we get through this initial phase and we've got these tables out there, I think and hope there'll still be money left over. And so the goal then is to move on to the next fences. So whether that be frangible oxers or open corners or whatever is available, gate kits, my hope is that we get to this $500,000 goal and then we do the next thing and then we do the next thing and the next thing. And that we get to the place where every single fence that can be frangible on cross country is able to be frangible on cross country and should be. And, you know, I don't think, and this is, I guess, the other thing, and I'm rambling, so I apologize, but the other piece is, as the cross country safety subcommittee chair and the national safety officer for eventing, I feel like part of my job is to help to make sure that we also don't lose the essence of cross country. And so I think I've kind of come to the place where I feel like we have this technology in place. As long as there's some sort of a penalty associated with it, if you trigger or activate a fence, then you're going to continue to have riders riding appropriately on cross country and not riding like they don't care because the fences fall down. And it takes a lot of force to trigger one of these fences. So you're not talking about a show jump, right? So like a show jump takes, I think Dave Voss was telling me, 5 joules of force to knock down. And one of these fences is something like around 200 joules to knock down. So it's a significant difference in force. So you're still going to have that essence of cross country, which I think is super important. And my main thing is I want to make sure that obviously we keep the essence of the sport, but also that if somebody makes a mistake on cross country, I don't think it should cost them their lives if there's technology that could prevent it. And I think, you know, to me, that's the key, is if we have the technology to help save a life, then if somebody makes a mistake, and we all make mistakes, some of us make more than others, but we all make them, we've got to try to prevent that from happening, or at least minimize the chance of it.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? You have to keep the essence of cross country. That is the sport that we love. But it is all about making it as safe as possible. And like you say, if there is a penalty connected to that, so at the moment it is 11 penalties under FEI competition for activating a frangible device. If you've incurred those penalties, but it has saved you from having a fall, then actually that is worth it, because you're not going to ride that fence with that. You're not going to ride the fence thinking, oh, well, I'll risk those 11 penalties. You're still going to give it the respect that it deserves. And that ultimately, we still want to respect cross country, but nobody should have to pay with their lives, which is ultimately what this is all about, because we want our sport to be as safe as possible and everybody to enjoy it, to love it as much as we all do. Can I ask you about the Mountain Foundation? So you mentioned a little bit earlier on, they have been so incredibly generous, and they are actually matching for every $50,000 that has been raised by the membership and by the US public. they are matching that with a $50,000 themselves, aren't they? Which is how we've managed to get to this incredible total so quickly.
So, yeah, I mean, they've been incredibly generous. When we first got the call from the Manton Foundation saying that they were interested in doing this, I was actually like, oh, yeah, right. Like, for real, somebody's going to actually donate that kind of money to a little fundraiser for a tiny little sport in the U.S. And I was not reluctant to get on the call, but I will say I was skeptical when I got on the first conference call with the foundation that this was actually going to happen. I figured it was going to go through some major corporation because I didn't really know a lot about the Manton Foundation. I figured it was going to go through some major corporation, and at some point somebody on the board of directors was going to say, yeah, no, it doesn't make sense for us to donate to eventing. But fortunately, they're event people. They get it, and it's something that's passionate to them, and they said they do it. And after I was on that call, literally for about the first 30 seconds, I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to actually happen. This is amazing. So yeah, it's incredible. It really is.
You feel a little bit like somebody's playing a joke on you at that point, don't you? Of like going, really? Is there a catch to this? But actually, it is a genuine offer whereby it has meant that the total has raised to 323,000 something pence and something cents. Pence, cents, UK, US. You know what I mean. You've got it. It's all there. And it has made a massive, massive difference. Rob, you already said that the fences are going out. They're being jumped at the moment. How does that happen? Because obviously, creating, I think you said 112 or something fences. How do you create that many fences and get them to the organizers, get them to the events for them to be used in competition?
So the USCA Foundation, with the help of the review committee that we've already talked about, spun up a grant program really quickly, got legal sign off and everything else. And what they, so each week, first, the first phase, we reached out to every competition that held national competitions from the preliminary level up and said, hey, we have this grant available. We had already, along with the USCF, been giving out grants for other fences for a number of years, but that was solely for just equipment. It wasn't for actually the construction and design. And so, our organizers out there are all pretty smart. And so they talked to their builders and talked to their designers and said, hey, is this something we can use? And then had a rush of grant requests. And that was open for an initial month. And then in phase two, which we're about to wrap up, well, in the next day or two, all the international competitions, FEI, were allowed to apply. And we're currently looking at phase three, which is along the lines of what John was talking about, opening it up to different obstacle types. So they would apply to us. They would initially get $500 in funds to jumpstart the cost of construction, as well as a table kit, a MIMS-safe table kit. And once they finished construction, all they did is just fire off a picture to us, and we'd send the final $500. And so with the work of our staff in the office, I have to give a huge shout out to Hannah Temple. We spun it up, and I'll say too, the really kind of great thing that happened at the same time was we had just taken over the frangible fence distribution or the frangible equipment distribution program from the USCF. So again, thanks to the staff, they just really quickly hit the ground running and we just got a huge shipment from Sweden of table kits. So we'll be able to supply every grant that's everyone who's applied for a grant has received it. So we'll be able to continue to do that through August with no problem. And I think we're going to meet all the requirements for table fences.
I think I've got a child's toy playing in the background. I don't even know how it started, which is a little bit creepy.
I love it.
Adds to the atmosphere. Yeah.
Can I just say one thing, Nicole? I don't mean absolutely. To interrupt, but I just, with what Rob was just saying, I do just want to say, and I mean this, a huge thanks to Rob and the entire USEA staff, because it would have been, especially with the whole pandemic happening pretty quickly after this, really easy for Rob to say, John, that's awesome. Good luck raising the $500,000. Really, thanks a lot for putting that out there. Go for it. And instead, he said, yeah, absolutely, we're going to make this happen. And I think I probably didn't at the time, and to be honest, I probably still don't appreciate the amount of strain that this whole thing put on Rob and the staff. It's a huge undertaking that I sort of got him into and got them into. And I think, you know, if anybody ever, there's always, I think everywhere in the world, but certainly in the US, there's always a mistrust of Big Brother and organizations, and you know, the FEI gets heat and the USEA gets heat, and the USEA is fortunate enough that it gets heat for the USEF and the FEI that isn't even deserved for the USEA to get. But if you ever wonder as a member, like, wow, what do these organizations do for us? Like, this is the best example of it. They stepped in, jumped in with both feet and said, we're going to take it on. So thank you, Rob.
Yeah, no, happy to, man. It's actually been a lot of fun, and it's kept us, it's given us something really positive to work for through the pandemic too, aside from getting competitions up and running and everything. It's been something we all want. And, you know, like John, I mean, I've had personal, some mentors of mine died early on in the sport. So for me, it's very personal, you know, because it's my friends. It's my, even at this point, I've got a daughter in the sport, so it's my family, and you know, I want to see them jumping the safest, most risk reduced course, and with the best equipment available, and with the best training. And I think that's kind of the broad picture too that John and everybody else from the USEA that we're all looking at is, it's not just the fences too. We're looking at everything from the rules to, I think this past week we've been looking really hard at the medical support to make sure it's adequate and kind of up to the standards of the rest of the world and hopefully beyond. So I appreciate that. And again, John's been an excellent leader for us.
It has been a huge team effort from the USEA, from John, from your team, from the membership, who have absolutely pulled together because everybody is working towards the same aim here. And frangible technology is a part of a number of things that can make our sport safer. As Rob, you just touched upon, whether it be qualifications, minimum eligibility requirements, get my mouth around that one, all of those things make a real difference. Education, training, everything all comes together. And actually, hopefully, we will make our sport safer and everybody will really enjoy it and reap the benefits of it. Now, what I want to ask is, John, we've got to talk about the tattoo. So right. You have committed yourself. You've committed your body to this campaign.
Absolutely.
Because for life. You actually, for life, you actually said, for anybody that hasn't heard it or seen it, you actually said once you reach 50,000, which in, you know, perhaps seemed like a small target in the grand scheme of things now, but it was a big target, you would get a tattoo that said frangible now, and you've got it, haven't you? You've marked your body for this tattoo.
I have. So, yeah, so we were like right around $200,000, I think it was, and things had slowed down a bit on the fundraising. So I was actually sitting with my big dumb yellow dog out by my pool and thinking about how I could sort of get things going a little bit again. And I was talking to my friend Rick Wallace at the time on the phone because we were all sort of locked down, and I don't remember how he said it or which one of us really came up with it, but basically it's like, oh, you should get a tattoo. Tell them you'll get a tattoo if you get to the next $50,000. So again, because it's me, I immediately made a video and posted it on social media without thinking about it at all.
Once you've made the video, you can't go back.
Totally. So I said, absolutely, we're going to do this. We need the next 50,000. I blamed it on my dog and said that he came up with the idea, but I think it was sort of a brainchild of Rick and maybe
a little bit. Blame it on Rick.
Yeah. And so again, because we'd kind of slowed down, I was like, there's no way we're going to get it. And then it started to look like we were. And then I started praying, like, maybe we'll get to like 49,999, because I said it had to happen before the first horse left the start box at the first competition back after the quarantine. And we made it pretty easily, to be honest. We were there, we were there like a week or two ahead of time and over it by like 10 or 15 grand. So, it happened. So I went and I did it, and I put a video out on social media again. And the only negative of the whole thing is I wanted people to really see how much it hurt because I got it on my ribs, but I had to wear a mask, of course. But if you look closely, you can see sort of from my nose up like that, pain. It just gets redder and redder through the whole thing. And I've had a fair bit of tattoos, which my mom is horrified by. But I will say the ribs do hurt a lot. It was only like a 4.5 minute tattoo because it just says hashtag frangible now. But on your ribs hurts a lot.
Now the question is, the $500,000 question. Right. And you know what I'm going to say? We're closing in now. With the Manson Foundation, there is, as you say, only about $78,000 left to do it. The membership are going to get behind you. What will you do when that target is reached? That's what we want to know.
I don't know. You know, I've been thinking a lot about it, and like, I have a lot of fears. So I'm afraid to like, throw something out there without thinking about it. Like, tattoos don't scare me. And now the problem is, I think people know that. So I have to come up with something. So I guess I'd put it out to the membership, and maybe that's the next stupid video I'll come up with, is I'll put it out to the membership and say, all right, what do you guys want me to do when we get to the end goal? And that scares me a little bit, but I'll have veto power over it. I would say, Rob, you look like you have something to say, which scares me.
So I learned on, so John's got a great show with Rick Wallace, the John and Rick show, that I was watching. I like to do a little show prep, and I watched a little bit of it yesterday night.
You watched it because it's a great show.
I was going to say, Rob, you watch it religiously. Don't say it was prep.
Yeah. I learned that John has a fear of fish.
I do.
Which really, this is odd because so do I. Like,
perfect.
I always said I would never marry a scuba diver. So
this could be about to become, John, a joint thing. Yeah. You right, and Rob could both do a forfeit when you get to $500,000.
Go on.
Like cage diving with sharks or something.
Oh, God. That's what I was afraid you were going to say. So I'll think about it. You know, when I was a kid, I actually tried to get over this fear, which I don't want to take up too much time, but it started with me when I was really young. I had an uncle who was a great man, but he had a pool and I was young. And so in his attempt to be responsible and keep me not jumping in the pool when the adults weren't around, he told me that there was a shark that lived in the deep end behind the pool light. And if I went into the pool, especially into the deep end without supervision, the shark would come out and eat me. And so to this day, I still struggle in my own pool to like tread water in the deep end. I'm always kind of looking behind me a little bit nervous. So then flash forward, my parents took me on a trip to Mexico when I was, I don't know, probably like 13 or 14 years old. And I decided that I was going to swim with these two sand sharks, which are really safe sharks in the ocean. They had sort of penned them in for the day. And so I got into the water and I'm sitting there and one of the guides has me holding the shark in the water. Right. And I'm holding the shark and I'm petting him. I'm like, you know what? These guys aren't so scary. It's fine. And all of a sudden out of nowhere, I got dragged under the water from behind, completely submerged. And when I jumped up screaming, it was the other guide behind me because all of the other members of this tour were up on the, like the boardwalk above me, and they were all laughing and had the greatest time in the world. And I'm pretty sure I'd wet myself, but fortunately I was in the ocean, so
that
it didn't matter.
So mean.
I know, it was horrible.
And oh, so gosh.
I am still like, not only did I not get over it, I'm worse.
Honest, listeners, if you are listening to this and you are thinking of how you can get John to do something when you hit $500,000, take pity on the man. He's doing an amazing thing. Right. Don't give him a fish related forfeit, please. But we would love your suggestions. So if you have any suggestions, John, we're going to get people to send them in and we will send them to you because that target is within reach. If people want to donate or if they've donated already and want to help in any way, John, what can they and should they be doing?
So, you know, I think one thing is to know we're a small sport, so it's going to take all of us. And if you've donated, it doesn't mean you're off the hook. You can donate again. It doesn't mean you have to donate. You know, we've had some huge donations. We've had $30,000 donations. Obviously, we have the Manton Foundation, which in the end essentially has donated $250,000. But we've also had people who've donated $20, and every bit helps. So, you know, I think that's the big thing, is make sure you donate and donate often. And then the other thing is, if you've donated and you just can't donate again, or you can't donate for financial reasons, that's totally understandable. But we have this amazing ability to share this on social media and to tell your friends about it. And the great news is a lot of us are still on quarantine and we're sitting around at home watching social media. So share the fundraiser, share this podcast, share the John and Rick show, cause it's on there too. share the cause and make sure you spread the word to everybody, and, just stay passionate about it, because it really is making a huge difference to the sport, and it's already out there on course right now.
I think that's the big thing, isn't it? It is making a huge difference, and everybody is working together for the greater good of everybody involved in the sport. So please, please, any little amount you can donate is much appreciated, and just share it, like it, talk to your friends about it, keep talking about it, because it isn't something that we want to kind of fall out of the forefront of people's minds. It has been an amazing journey to this point. We cannot wait to see where it goes next and what the next project is going to be. What fences next can all be developed to help make the sport safer. Rob, John, thank you both so, so much. It has been brilliant to have you on the show. And we've loved hearing a little bit more about it, because amazing progress. You should both be really, really pleased and proud of yourselves and the whole team.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk about it.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you both, listeners. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the USCA official podcast. Don't forget, you can send in any suggestions for John and Rob to do forfeit when you hit 500,000. To be honest, please don't
no
put
sharks.
The sharks in there. Have a little... have a little sort of empathy for them both, but send in your suggestions. We would love to hear from you. And thank you very much for tuning in. Thanks for watching. We'll be back very soon with another episode of the USCA official podcast. Thanks for listening to the USCA official podcast. If you have any suggestions or feedback, then we would love to hear from you. Get in touch through any of our social media platforms at US Eventing, and don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform to make sure you don't miss an episode.